Good evening, everyone. My name is Marcia Stone, and I'm a recovered alcoholic and drug addict. Hey, everyone. It's good to be here tonight. It's my honor to introduce our speaker, Julie Harvey, who has traveled here from Dallas to share her experience, strength, and hope with us. You know, I was just thinking about the first time I met Julie, and then my second thought was it doesn't really matter because she's one of those people that I just connected to instantly. And, you know, I might not talk to her for months at a time, but when we do pick up the phone, there's just that instant heart-to-heart, the God in me connecting with the God in her just instantly. I've read inventory to her. She knows what she's doing. And she tells the truth. She walks the walk. She does a ton of service work. She's super involved in Alcoholics Anonymous up in Dallas. And you guys are in for a real treat. And she has a bum knee, so we have to clap extra loud and be super grateful that she traveled down here to visit with us. So come on up, Julie.
Keep it up. I don't mind it. I have to have her in here, though, for this book. Thank you, Marcia. Thank you. Y'all are making me blush. My name is Julie Harvey, and I am a recovered alcoholic. And I haven't had a drink since September 16th of 2003, and for that, I am so grateful. So, so grateful. But it's only because I followed some directions in this big book. Easy directions. Simple, but not easy, I should say. in this big book, and therefore, I get to thank God one day at a time, right? I was talking to Marcia, and yeah, guys, I've been laid up in bed for the last 2.5 weeks. I mean, I haven't moved. Ask my husband, he's getting tired of me. But I was supposed to, Marcia had asked me to come in December, and I'm like, and I said, absolutely, I'd love to, and then December rolls around, and I'm like, oh my gosh, I got this opportunity to go skiing for free. This lady was putting us up, and I said, I have to go. We're leaving the kids at home and everything. Absolutely, Julie, we can reschedule you. I fell. And so I just had surgery a couple weeks, 2.5 weeks ago, and I came down with the flu, and I swear, I was going, God, you have to make me well. Like, I cannot, I have to go. If I don't go this time, lightning will strike. I know it. It's not, it's got to happen. So here I am, bear with me. I'm a little out of sorts, out of touch, you know. Sometimes I feel like my thoughts are like all on page, and then I walk away going, oh my gosh, I can't believe I even said that. That was so stupid. Oh my gosh, I'm being recorded. Hate it. Right? Like, now everybody gets to hear how stupid I am. You know, I think we all have this persona that when we walk in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous or Cocaine Anonymous or whatever your fellowship may be, hopefully they're using the big book, and that is my opinion. And so, you know, when we come in here, we have this whole idea, or we walk into a treatment center, we walk into a facility, or we walk into a meeting for the first time. And we think, oh my gosh, what did I come in here for? And then like, then the next thought is like, hit the door! Run, quit! They're all coming at me, right? Oh shit! Oh, sorry if there's children in the room. I'm gonna have to do something, like, this is for real, right? But it's serious, guys. Like, I'm going to tell you, my experience was I walked into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous for 13 years. 13 years before I got sober. And it was only because I walked into a treatment center willingly, then cried for the next 14 days, screaming to get me out. And I stayed, fortunately. I don't know if any of y'all are in here, like, and if anybody try to get out, it's like all of a sudden it's interfering. Everybody's on their walkie-talkies like, oh shit, that didn't work. Somebody who can connect with her, right? Like, I had my cell phone, my own family wig, my husband just kind of snuck my cell phone, right? I'm like, I'm walking down the road at this little treatment center place, and I'm walking down the road, and I'm like, get me out! And this one lady comes up in a golf cart. I have golf carts coming after me, right? Like, golf carts coming after me, and she's like, Julie, is that a cell phone? I'm like, duh! Right? Like, you take the booze away from me, I am not nice at all, right? Especially if I don't have a solution. And so the next thing I know, so that didn't work. They go, next golf cart comes up, that didn't work. Next, then I hear this, Julie, and I'm like, oh, Carol, I can't be mean to Carol, right? Like, hook, line, and sinker, we have her. She stayed another night, and thank God I did. This disease wants to take us right back out the door. This is the only illness that I know that will kill us, and we don't even know it. But the families and the friends and the employers all sit around and look at you and say, you're up. What's going on? And we're throwing our hands up in the air. I don't know, but I need a drink. And that's the reality of this. And it's like, why? I love this big book, and I gotta go here because, you know, if we were just here, I was talking to Marcia earlier and Jonathan, and we're talking about this because, guys, this isn't always fun to do. Like, I sometimes I feel like I spend more time trying to get somebody sober than they're trying, right? Like, I need to see some action on both parts, and it's frustrating. But then we see the successes, and we see the rewards, and we see them come back, and we see them keep going and living life. And you come in these rooms, and you think of one thing. Like, I'm going to quit smoking dope. I'm going to quit drinking. I'm going to quit, right? And that's all we can see. We have, like, these blinders on. And then you fast forward a year, and you would be amazed of the things that can happen in your life. Like, guys, I don't know about you, but I did not come to Alcoholics Anonymous for God. I had that. God and I were tight. Like, I didn't need to know your persona on God. Like, I didn't need to know what you thought, right? Like, I've got my own gods. You stick with yours. I came in to quit drinking. That's it. That's all. But for some reason, I kept coming to these stupid meetings, right? And I will say they were stupid because nobody talked about the problem. Nobody talked about the real problem. All they wanted to do were talk about their war stories. And then they're this and they're that. And how it was out on the streets or how they're... And I'm sitting here going, I'm a freaking housewife. I'm a housewife in a backyard. I'm not going out to bars. If I go out to bars, clothes come off. It's not pretty. Nobody wanted to see it. My husband is like, keep it home. Bless his heart. Why he stayed. God only knows. So I'm a backyard drinker. I'm not going out to bars. Like, I know. Like, we're going to hang tight. You can join or not. I don't really care. Right? My husband used to say, God, honey, I'm on my fourth and you're on your fourth and I'm done. I'm like, I know, baby. And he goes, you're just getting started. I'm like, I know, baby. Go in the house. Bye-bye. You know? And I would be up until midnight. It's just 2 a.m, right? I had a desperate desire to stop, and my husband saw it. And he saw it. And he saw me try to go to AA, and he saw me do what they asked me to do. And please don't even ever tell me that I didn't want it, because I did. You know, the first time I walked in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I was 23 years old. And I did not get sober until I was, God, do the math, Julie, 36. And my mom was looking up AA when I was 18. First time I drank was in Georgetown, from Georgetown to Austin, Def Leppard concert. I'll never forget, I was 15 years old, and I was out, we were at the Blue Hole. Does anybody do the Blue Hole? Does anybody know what that is? Oh my gosh, there's a secret. I gotta tell you guys about it, because it's fun. We used to go out there, and we'd jump down, and this, you know, and have so much fun. And I was out there with my cousin, 15, and driving from... I was always hanging with the guys. I was never with my, you know, aunt and my girl cousin. I was always with the guys. And so then they all loaded up and said, hey, we're going to go to this Def Leppard concert. You want to come? And I'm like, absolutely. So we get in the car. I drink 6 tall boys in the 45-minute drive from Georgetown to Georgetown to Austin. And then I proceeded to puke through the whole concert. Don't remember a darn thing about it, but all I remember is I had a blast. And for the first time, this is what I remember, for the first time, I didn't care what I said. I didn't have to repeat everything I said. I didn't have to watch my words. I didn't have to feel less than. I didn't have to feel anything. I just had fun. Like, this was it. And this was most kids, right? Like, we all do that. That's what high school and college is all about. I wish I got to college. I didn't. Never made it that far, right? And so my drinking immediately was like that. But not everybody's is, right? Like, there is a time and a place to share our war stories. Sometimes it's up from the podium. I got to identify myself, right? Like, you got to understand where I'm coming from. But then there's another time. It's sitting one-on-one with another alcoholic or one-on-one with one addict to another addict, explaining that mental twist. Because it's that mental twist that keeps us going back out there again and again. Because I'm going to tell you, it ain't about the body part. Guys, I know, like from the first time I drank, I knew I drank weird. Because, I mean, in high school, they were like, let's go and have a drink and off camp, what was it, lunch, at lunch, and they'd go and then they would leave and go back to school. I'm like, wait a minute, party's just starting, right? You cannot leave. So I quickly learned that I already drank more than most of my friends. And so I kind of knew that part, right? Like, I knew that physical piece of this. I knew that. But I didn't understand why I kept going to it. Because, see, after losing two kids because of my drinking and having a restraining order against me, losing my place where I live, not being able, I'm practically living in my car, right? And that was the first time I walked into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous on my own, and nobody asked me to. I did a lot of bowling. I did a lot of decorating for parties. I did a lot of meetings. I was a meeting maker, meeting three times a day. I sure wasn't living, and I sure wasn't free, and that is not what this program gives us at all. And so as soon as I could, I was back out there again. I met this wonderful man, and he decided to marry me. I don't know why. And then we have two beautiful children together, and life is good. And I have visitation with my boys. I'm getting along with my ex-husband. I'm drinking, right? But life is okay. And so this is what puzzles me, because I think we always want to picture, what does an alcoholic look like? What does an addict look like? Look around the room. It's not about hitting a bottom. It's not about any of that. Because at 23 years old, do you think I hit a bottom? Absolutely. Well, I went to AA. Surely that was enough, right? I've lost everything. At 36, where's my bottom? I have a house. I have a husband. I have kids. I have everything you could ever desire. I volunteer for the church. I volunteer for school. I'm out there planting flowers in the school. I might be drunk, but by golly, they're getting planted. They need it. I'm going to tell you what you need, and you're going to listen. Right? And so my husband watched me enter the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and come in and out and in and out. And let me tell you, when I was going to those meetings and trying, there's my sponsor's picture up there. Oh, my gosh, I love that man. So cool. And so I'm sitting there trying, page 155. I'm hot. God, I was so cold. Now I'm like, no, I'm not. He had a desperate desire to stop. Anybody ever have a desperate desire to stop? I don't mean just a little inkling of it. I don't mean like, oh my gosh, I might need to stop. No, a desperate desire, that dire desire that comes from within, right? For he had earnestly tried many avenues of escape. This is not waking up one day going, I think we have a little problem. I think this is a term of like beating this and beating this with our own willpower over and over again, and trying to just not take that first drink, or to not take that first pill, or to not take that first line, right? What, not take that, whatever it is. And so we have this desperate desire to stop. And how many, like, I'll tell you my different avenues. Volunteering was one of them. Like, if I volunteer more, my husband one time, he's like, well, why don't you just volunteer more? I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm volunteered out. I cannot sign on another. I was on the lay committee to say, preacher, yes, you can be a preacher. I am at home calling my little people neighbors and everybody to help while I'm in my backyard drunk. It wasn't like I woke up and said, please let me be that mother that drives through carpool with a beer in her hand. Right? It's not like I woke up and did that. Oh my gosh, I'm a pretty darn good mother. I really am. And I will say that. It wasn't my desire ever. But I couldn't help it. I didn't have a choice. And it was one thing, once I put it in, I couldn't stop. My gosh, I knew that. You girls, mostly girls, I have to say, because most of the guys already know, we're not going to do that. Like, they're going to get, like, the little thing of, who does it? I know y'all do. Like, the little thing of wine. That one. This is, or the four pack. It cracks me up. You're the ones who get the DWI. You know you're going back. Just stock up. Right? We're going to make sure we have plenty. It's on, whether you come or not. So I kind of knew, like, once I started, I couldn't stop, right? So get that physical piece out of the way. Thank you very much, Dr. Silkworth. That is not what I heard in meetings, though. What I heard in meetings was this allergy that we had, this phenomenal craving that we had, was I would hear, I break out in handcuffs. Shut up! Shut up! I'm a housewife! We have students in here that are dying because of this, because they don't need to get to the depths that some of us did. Like, I'm telling you, I knew I was an alcoholic. My mom knew it when I was 18 years old. Why did I have to wait till I was 36 to get sober? Because of stupid people in the meetings running their stupid mouth. Sorry. We can drive them out. And please don't say, well, if we drive them out, booze or dope will drive them back in. You know where it can drive you? It can drive you to the grave. And that is your bottom. See, that is what a bottom looks like. This is also a bottom. He had a desperate desire to stop, but saw no way out, for he had earnestly tried many avenues of escape. Painfully aware of being somehow abnormal, the man did not fully realize what it meant to be an alcoholic or addict. Did not fully realize. This was me. Guys, after 13 years of being in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, this was me. I never fully realized what it meant to be what it meant. I remember sitting at the edge of our bed one night and I said, honey, I remember just tearing and crying and saying, honey, I am so sorry. I cannot make you any more promises because I'm going to drink and I don't know why. I don't know why. I don't know why it is that I had another firm resolution and I truly meant it, and I don't not love you because I said I'm going to quit and I did it again. I was sitting in front of the refrigerator rocking back and forth, begging, tears in my eyes, begging, please don't open the refrigerator. Please don't open the refrigerator. Wait till after carpool. Right? Like, I don't even have to resign for the day. I mean, just get me through carpool. And I couldn't manage that decision. No choice. And we come in here and we still think we have it. We still think we're going to beat the game. We still think that there's a way out of this. It takes a while for us to that really sink in. Like, we apply all this human power and this will to not drink or drug, don't we? I just propose a question. What different ways did you try to stop or moderate? Only on weekends? Oh, let's switch to that. Just that. Let's take a trip. Let's take an oath. Let's pour it out. Waste. It's a waste. My husband, after I got sober, he told me a lot after I got sober. He never really messed with me too much when I was drinking. I was a little nicer. But he said, yeah, some mornings I would just come in there and pour out some of the beers. I would just pour it out. And I said, why, honey? You knew I was going to go back to the liquor store. He's like, yeah, but it made me feel good for a minute. Mm-hmm. every one of us needs to read The Family After and to the wives and to the employers so we can understand the devastation that this causes everyone. And I know what it's like. I come in here thinking, I ain't heard nobody. Ain't nobody else drunk but me. Right? I'm it, right? We all, and then we come up out of that cellar going, oh, wait a minute, there's a tornado around me. Shit. Go back in. Hide. But you gotta look at this though, because see, if the family could get us sober, how many of us would be sober already? Absolutely, right? But, and look at all the different willpower that families come at this, right? Like pouring it down the waste pipe, deleting phone numbers, locking them up, right? I mean, come on. The list goes on, and it talks about in the book the experience of these guys. This is what the amazing thing, that this hasn't changed. The drink and the drug has not changed. You know, they've been trying to find a remedy for this since it's documented in the 1700s. And that sober homes were in the 1700s. And do you know we weren't even allowed in hospitals because it was an issue of morality? We, along with the unwed pregnant women, were not allowed in hospitals. They used to use leeches on us. How many different remedies have they always tried? And in the 1930s, these guys came up with this idea. Out of experience. Out of an idea. Out of a theory. A theory. And that theory became a fact. It's the coolest thing. I don't know about you guys, but I tried 1,000 different ways to stop on my own willpower. I tried 1,000 different ways. And I got to that point where I knew I was not going to be able to stop. But I was not going to go back to Alcoholics Anonymous. I was, even my husband, when he put me in treatment, he goes, y'all just need to know she's not going back to do that. He was like, I think at one point he was probably happy that I finally drank. God, I was so not nice. I'm a little nicer now, just a little bit. There's this thing that I found, and it says, what it takes to sustain sobriety is quite different from what it takes to initiate sobriety. I wish I would have come up with that sentence. I didn't. I found it in an old history book. But this is like, but you have to understand that sentence was written in the way back. Early 1900s, right? Like, we have been trying to get people sober for a long time. The problem is that we can't get anybody sober because we can't even get ourselves sober. Isn't that right? But how many attempts and failures does it take for us to see that? How many times do we have to try to go beat that game again? Sometimes it takes us a little bit longer. That's why I have to tell you, I love this place. I love this place. I love that y'all can have a few months in here and you get to go through the work and you get to start taking other people through the work. Because guys, let me tell you, 13 years of sitting in meetings and sitting in church and sitting here and sitting with Dr. Phil and sitting anywhere. Like, where do you want me to sit? I will sit there. I will do what you tell me to do. I wasn't a defiant one, right? I'm doing everything they're telling me to do, but unfortunately, they didn't know what to tell me to do. It wasn't their fault. You know what? We need to go out there and take the rooms back over. Take the rooms of AA and CA over, right? Like, the coolest thing is you get to come in here and you get to leave with a mission. With a vision. You don't have to go into a room and talk about war stories. You get to pull these guys with a new vision. How cool is that? Mama couldn't get me sober. God love her, she wanted to. My kids couldn't get me sober. My husband couldn't get me sober. Dr. Phil, so sorry, couldn't get me sober. It's kind of hard to get anyone sober when you've got a little vodka bottle next to you, too. Me, him, and my vodka bottle. It's fun times at the Omni. So true. It's a true story. We got several. They're kind of funny. And I was going to go in so many different ways, but I'm going to go to page 18. It says, but the ex-problem drinker who has found this solution, who is properly armed with facts about himself, can generally win the entire confidence of another alcoholic in a few hours. Until such an understanding is reached, little or nothing can be accomplished. I've never heard truer words than that. When another guy got across the table from me and sat down with me and said, here's the deal, right? You have no control once you put it in and no choice whether you will put it in. See, that's what makes you an alcoholic. That's what makes you an addict. It has nothing to do with your outside circumstances. In fact, I don't even care about your outside circumstances. They are not important. I'm like, do you not know who I am? I am very important. Check at the door. You need to understand who you're talking to. I love the people who could care less, right? Like I'm so grateful that they handled me with these kid gloves, but in the truthful way, right? And they were sensitive yet stern, and I can handle that. I can handle something that's in black and white, like I can handle the truth. I can handle that. And what I can't handle are fluffy stuff. I'll tell you, I spent a long like turn it over, let it go. Oh my gosh. Do we need to circle up and sing Kumbaya? I do not know how to do that. Right? Like if I knew how to turn it over and let it go. Well, you keep taking it back, Julie. How? I didn't wake up and say, can I have it back, please? They're like, well, you know, they never have an answer for anything. Those are the people steer clear from, right? If they say, you took it back, steer clear. I love what my sponsor says. He goes, Julie, you really want to take that third step decision back? No, old man. Don't. Right? Like, that's what I have to say. And that's kind of how, because it's so funny. We come in here and we have all these perceptions on what these steps look like, especially if you guys have never been in those darkening rooms. Oh, bless you. You don't ever have to go. Unless you want to, with your big book, armed with the facts, right? And so we always get these stupid little things in there. But the coolest thing is when someone finally sat me down and said, here's the deal. This is what it looks like. And it has nothing to do with how you were raised or how you weren't raised or, you know, who your mommy and daddy were or who they weren't were, right? Like it has nothing to do with that. This isn't behavioral. if it were all behavioral, the only people who really understand that is us. I'm telling you, I had a good mom and dad. They were great. And they did nothing wrong. Like they did nothing. And then you get over here and you have these people you have the worst parents and they come up with the best kid ever, right? Like that's me. Like my kid is perfect. I'm like, where'd you come from? Somebody flew you in, UFO. Must have been from my husband. He's normal. It freaks me out. He's so funny. When we go to dinner now, sometimes he leaves that little bit, like just that little bit, and I'm eyeballing it still. 8 years sober, I'm like, he's like, you want me to drink this? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I need you to. Put it down. Push through it. He's like, nah, I'm just going to walk away. I'm like, all right. It's so funny. I'm like, God, that's just doesn't make sense to me. I was on the plane. One of my great grand sponsors said something. He was like on this airplane one time, and you know, the guy sitting next to him orders a drink, and he orders it, and he takes half of it, and he pours half into the cup, puts it in his pocket. And so Joe turns to him, and he's like, hey, what are you going to do with the rest of that? And he's like, because this guy just stirs it, you know, opens the paper. And he's like, what are you going to do with the rest of that? And he said, well, I'll take it home. I might have it in a couple of days. And we're like, what? Like, just bring five of those little bottles. Don't even bring the Coke. Don't eat it. Right? And so if you're not one of us, you can't really understand that mentality around it. I mean, it's too hard to fathom it. It's too hard to understand when you want so desperately not to do it and you do it anyway. And to everybody else, it looks like a matter of willpower or a matter of choice. Now, I'm sure some of us in here might have that Uncle Joe or Aunt Susie who stopped, who had some, I don't know, bad stuff happened. Maybe she got a DUI. Maybe Uncle whatever left, right? And then they were able to stop. And so everybody else is going, hey, look at Aunt Susie. She quit, right? Look at Uncle Joe. He quit. Why don't you? And they're like, okay, yeah, I think I can do that. Yeah, I can do that. And then we don't. We fail miserably. And I think that's the difference between someone who just has a hard time with it. Maybe it's a little deal and they can get past of it. And then the real, true, real addict or alcoholic with sufficient reason, with lots of sufficient reasons, they can't stop or moderate. And so that's who this book applies to. See, people like Marsha and Jonathan and people like that, and I know there's a bunch of you guys in here that are out on the firing line, and you know, why is it that this book becomes a hot source, right? Like, I don't know about you guys, like, you ever go to a meeting, they're like, oh, there's that big book thumper. Like, that's a bad thing. Like, really? Okay, they've been trying to get a solution for this problem for umpteen years. In the 30s, we get this little book. All of a sudden, people are getting sober. And guess what? Staying sober. You see, I don't want anybody sober for a hot minute. I want you to stay sober. This is all about lasting sobriety. Back in the day, their success rates were 75% and more. There were some certain cities in Akron around there, they were getting higher statistics than that. Why? Because they were following the directions that were outlined in this book. They did not put it up on a shelf. They actually used it. And so when they went into meetings, the meeting was for the newcomer, not for the old guy that's been sitting there 15 years, never worked a freaking step in his life, tells you to just keep coming back and put the plug in the jug and just play the tape. I play lots of tapes and they go my way. Let me tell ya. Play the tape, you idiot. I like the sign. Y'all ever see those signs? Think, think, think. You don't get to. Anybody I sponsor, you don't get to think. Let's work some steps. Let's get into some action. You've been thinking. I know all that philosophizing you've been doing. I ain't getting you nowhere, right? Like, I know you're smart. I'm not saying, oh my gosh. I've always said we are some of the most intelligent people, or crafty, or sneaky, or manipulative, something. But if I ever get stranded on the island, I want you guys with me because we will get off. I mean, that's true. Like, we will be out of there in no time. This is the truest. Where do I go with that? Like, I'm all over the board tonight. I told you, I've been in bed for 2.5 weeks. I can't do that. It's no good. My brain's all loo-loo-loo. I realize that there are some of us who come in here who just need to get the heat on. I realize that. But do you understand why their success rates were so good back then? Because back then, and Bill polled these guys. I mean, in the front of the book, y'all need to read those, the four words and everything else, right? And Bill polled these guys, and he said 50% of the room, like 50% got sober at once and remained that way. 25% sobered up after some relapse and came back and stayed sober. 75% were staying sober, right? So Bill polled these guys when they left and they came back, and he said, why'd y'all leave? And they all said different things. Some of them said, well, because you told me that this was a spiritual program and I didn't like that. I understand that. I remember standing up in a room, in an Alcoholics Anonymous room, and I'm like, if this is a spiritual program, then y'all are... And I walked out and got drunk. I thought I knew everything. Some of them said that they didn't like you guys. Then there. If y'all are coming for the fellowship only, bless ya. I find a better fellowship. No, I mean, I'm not going to. Some of the guys are hot and some of the girls are cute, but right? That ain't why we're here. But here's the cool thing, though. He asked them the question, well, why did you return? Why did you come back? And, you know, they all said the same thing. They said, because you told me that if I had a mind like yours, the day would come and I would not have a defense against that first drink and I would drink again. And I did. And we want to discount this book. We want to call big book thumpers like they're an evil thing. But clearly, back in the day, they were doing exactly what this book said to do. They were not pulling, take what you want, leave the rest. Like, they were doing it all. And so, the coolest thing in all of that is I spent 13 years, and I'm still going, I don't know why I took that first drink. I do not know why I took that first drink. I do not understand it, right? And they made sure, before they left, that they had some knowledge. And knowledge will get us good as it will get us. Some of us can have great knowledge of this book, right? But if we don't have the experiences of what the steps can do in our life, we're going to sit with knowledge and be miserable. Make sense? I don't know if you've seen them. I've seen those people. They sit around and they're like, you know, quoting all this stuff, but yet they're cheating on their wife. They're cheating on the taxes. They're, you know, doing whatever they want to do. And all of a sudden they say they're all spiritual. I don't know. I have a book that tells me that I have to be honest. And I have a book that says when you don't, you have to go and make amends. And guess what? It's a requirement. It's a must. And if I don't, I'll get drunk. It took me a little while to understand all of this, guys. I don't know. I thought at 30 days sober, 45 a day sober, I was all smart and I had it all, and I did. I had worked the steps. I had a great understanding of this. I was able to start working with others. I'll never forget being 2 months sober and my sponsor said, she needs her fifth step done. Go do it. I'm like, whoa, wait a minute. I don't know if I can do that, right? Absolutely, yes, sir. Took her in the back room and thus started my journey. And if it hadn't been for that man who said, you will go work with others, you will go carry the message, or there's the door. You will go away. And if I hadn't had something like that, I would be drunk. Because I tried sitting around in the meetings. I tried being the taker. I need to go and see what I can get. I got, right, and then you get all this good lofty stuff and you don't know how to hold it and make it work in your life. And all of a sudden, I'm working these steps, I'm working with others, and things are changing. I have a daughter that was 9 at the time, I don't know, 8 or 9 when I got sober, and she was so... Bless everybody's heart. I was out Monday night, Tuesday night home group, Wednesday night carrying the message, Thursday day carrying the message, Thursday night home group, Friday night, if my husband would let me, I would drive out to Fort Worth and do another, and then Sunday I was at the 24-hour club. Guess who watched my children? Guess who cooked guess who took care of my kids? My husband did. And you know, I'm going to say, because I'm a woman, some of it's hard getting home, because it's not about just being in a place of safety. It's about getting home and taking the experience that you have with this, right? Like, it's not just our war story experience, but it's the experience that we get through working the steps and taking this to wherever you go back to. Please don't ever think because you don't have a big book meeting at home that you can't do this. It's BS. With this chip of a book in your hand, this chip, the first 164 pages, is the best chip that you will ever have in your hand, because with it holds everything. It's not about the sponsor. It's not about this. It's about you and God. And I didn't understand that. And today I do. And if I hadn't had somebody who held me accountable with this book and took me back to God every single time, I would have been sitting in those rooms still trying to get sober. And the reason my husband let me go and do, and I always say this, I work for a little place, and I get to talk to the families, and I get to do this little, and I always tell the families, you know, I know you want them home. I know. I would be selfish. I'm like, I love y'all. I have so much respect for you guys who, you know, are married in this fellowship, but I am too selfish. I need one selfish person in my household, and that must be me. I hate age. Age sucks. I always forget things. But when I got home, it's like, you know, just shut the door. You can cuss them out, but shut the door first and then cuss. I think my husband was willing to do that because for the first time, he saw me not just not drinking, but he saw me at peace. He saw me happy. And he said to me one time, he said, Julie, I may not have you here as often, but when I do have you here, you are present. Because in the back of my mind, I am not sitting there thinking, when am I going to drink? How am I going to drink? Who needs to leave to drink? I need to get everybody out. I need to do this. This needs to happen, right? I'm so there. And that's what this is all about. The freedom of this. Guys, it doesn't have to be just for the alcoholic or addict. The coolest thing is that family members can join this too. And with everybody's, you know, the worst things that have happened in our lives can be the greatest assets. I've had men call my husband that are struggling with the wife of an alcoholic. My kid, he is 22 now, but when he was in high school, he watched a friend of his mother was an alcoholic, and he got to share his experience with them. You know, it's not anything that we have to go, ooh, that's an alcoholic, right? Like, everybody has this idea of what an alcoholic looks like or what an addict looks like. And it's not the guy under the bridge. It's the guy sitting next to you in high school. It's the lady sitting next to you at work. It's your preacher. It's everyone. Anyone can be afflicted with this. It doesn't matter where you've been raised, how you've been raised. It's not behavioral. We need to quit treating it like it is. Mm. I worked the steps rapidly because that's how they were intended to be worked. Rapidly. Why? So then I could go out and help somebody else. Period. Because what saves the day? I remember pulling up. I used to take I used to carry the, they closed the women's unit. I cried the last night. I went there for 6 years. Wednesday night and Wednesday morning. And I used to carry the message there. I remember pulling up in the driveway one time, and I called my sponsor, and I said, I am just not feeling spiritual. I don't want to be here. Right? Like, this sucks. And he's like, it doesn't matter how you feel. You showed up. God will come. You go do. Because that's the decision you made. I went in there, came out lighter than ever. And see, all of a sudden, I start changing. All of a sudden, I'm not trying to make myself any nicer. God knows I'm not. But all of a sudden, God's making me nicer. All of a sudden, God's removing stuff from me that I didn't even need removed. Right? And my little thinking, I'm like, we're good with that one. Let's hold tight. He's like, uh-uh. I don't have to, it's like you don't have to wake up and say, I will myself not to drink. Just like I don't have to will myself to be good. I don't have to will myself to be the perfect mom, the perfect this. I don't will anything anymore. I just wake up, say, good morning, God. And I always remember who's in charge, and it's not me. It's not me. I wish it were some days. I think about it. And I think, how well could this go down? And then I wake up. It's a bad dream. I had a dream the other night. This is no joke. I had a dream the other night that I was... how many of you guys in here have worked the steps and all of a sudden you felt a new freedom? And like you're not trying to keep yourself sober for the first time. Oh, thank you, baby. I mean, it's the coolest thing. Like we wake up and we're like, oh my God, guys, 3:00. I didn't think about a drink today. I mean, tears. I'll never forget the first day I looked down at my watch and it was 3:00. And I had not thought about a drink just that day. I can't tell you, that's the coolest thing. I remember mowing the grass. I would mow the grass. And I could mow the grass without thinking about a drink. Guys, I mowed the grass to drink. I mean, my husband was like, there are no weeds, Julie. Come in the house. I'm like, they're there. They're sprouting up. I would go out and work in a garden. I mean, all these little things. And all of a sudden, I wake up and I'm not even thinking about it. It's not even an issue anymore. You know? I mean, when we can walk around and it's not even, it's that the problem's been removed. And that is a 10-step promise. And it's the coolest thing ever. You're the kickers. You got to work all the steps to get it. But I had a dream the other night that I was back to where I used to be. Like, just fighting it off and avoiding it. And I was in a meeting and I was like, all those feelings came back again. And I in this dream, I was in a red pickup truck and I went up to the gas station and I went in and I got a beer and I came out and I saw another fellow from Alcoholics Anonymous and I didn't care. I didn't care. Because that's who I am when I'm not living in this. Make sense? Or did I just go, what are we talking about? Like, I don't ever want to go back to feeling that way. I don't ever want to be there again. I don't wish that upon anybody. And that is not what this program intends you to be. We do not want you dodging anything or anyone. We do not want you fighting this. We want you absolutely free, because the freedom in that is what is you're going to be able to pull somebody else with the vision. If you're sitting there hanging on to the edge of your seat, work the steps. If you're still hanging on the edge of the seat, work them again. I promise you. This program will give you the coolest things and you walk in and, you know, I told you I had a 9-year-old daughter. I'm going to end with this because when I first came in, all I wanted to do was just not drink. Like, that's it, right? And the stuff that I've gotten amazes me. For me to be able to stand up here just freaks me out because I don't even like people that much. Stand in a room full in front of them and speak freaks me out. My daughter is a senior this year, and I never get through this without crying, so forgive me. But she had to write, you know, to get into colleges. She's been accepted into three with three different scholarships. I'm so proud of her. But she had to write an essay to turn into for her senior thesis, or not thesis, but to turn in about a person that she admired. And she wrote it about me. Since I was just an innocent, naive, 9-year-old little girl when my parents sat me down to explain why mommy was leaving for a couple of weeks. I had never noticed my mom's drinking problem growing up because I never knew anything different. But once she admitted it, I noticed how odd it was that she would drink a whole bottle of wine before bed or always have a beer bottle in her hand. I began to feel ashamed of the person my mom had become because I didn't want to admit to myself or anyone else that the person I had idealized as a child was far from perfect. But what I had seen, what I had been ashamed of as a child, I should have embraced as something to praise. My mom was altering her life in a way that would not only save hers, but would help me understand that her getting help was a great thing too. There are lots of people with drinking problems that they've destroyed their lives and their families by not getting help. And my mom stepped above that, knowing she needed to get better for us. Watching my mom now and seeing how much she works to stay sober and her dedication to help others through their tough time, I see the strong and loving woman who was my idol as a child. I no longer was ashamed of her because I knew her dedication to change was what made her great. She was willing to modify her life so that she could be the best wife and mother. She was and will always be my biggest inspiration because she showed me how, as long as I stay strong and work towards my ultimate goal, I can overcome any obstacle put in my way. That is not why I came in here. But that is what I get because I work a program. I work an honest program to the best of my ability. I fail utterly. I fail a lot. And it's the coolest thing ever. Love you guys. Thank you for letting me.